This is your strategic briefing for today. We're tracking a fundamental power shift unfolding across the European theater that will reshape transatlantic relations for decades to come. The Ukraine-Russia conflict is entering what intelligence analysts are calling a decisive phase, but not for the reasons most media coverage suggests. Three interconnected developments are converging right now that signal something far more consequential than battlefield maneuvers. We're witnessing European intelligence independence that fundamentally reduces American leverage, mounting Russian economic pressure that threatens war sustainability within a calculable timeframe, and China's deepening co-belligerency through drone technology transfers that crystallizes the emerging Sino-Russian axis. Together, these dynamics represent nothing less than a fundamental restructuring of the transatlantic security architecture and the Eurasian power balance. Let me start with what I consider the most strategically significant development, one that hasn't received nearly the attention it deserves. Europe has demonstrated the capability to replace U.S. intelligence support for Ukraine within a matter of months. Now, to understand why this matters, we need to step back from the immediate tactical implications and look at what this represents for the structure of Western power. For seven decades, American intelligence dominance has been the invisible foundation of NATO's operational effectiveness. Satellite reconnaissance, signals intelligence, real-time battlefield assessment, these capabilities have been almost exclusively American, with European allies acting as junior partners dependent on U.S. data feeds. That dependency created leverage. Washington could always implicitly threaten intelligence cutoff to shape European security decisions. That leverage just evaporated. The power implications here are profound. The Trump administration, or any future U.S. administration for that matter, can no longer credibly threaten intelligence cutoff as a bargaining chip over European-Ukraine policy. This fundamentally alters the negotiating dynamics within NATO. We're moving from American-dominated decision-making toward something that looks much more like multipolar Western decision-making. Building on that foundation, if Europe can field comprehensive intelligence architecture for high-intensity conflict, something that requires massive satellite networks, fusion centers, signals intelligence capabilities, and analytical infrastructure, then Europe possesses the foundation for fully independent military operations. Think about what that means. This potentially reduces NATO's U.S.-centric command structure over time. Not immediately, but the trajectory is clear. More importantly, this has implications extending far beyond Ukraine. Consider future conflicts in Europe's near abroad. The Balkans remain unstable, the Caucasus could flare up, frozen conflicts in Moldova or Georgia could reignite. In any of these scenarios, Europe and American interests may diverge. Europe now has the intelligence infrastructure to act independently if it chooses to do so. The historical parallel that keeps coming to mind is France under de Gaulle withdrawing from NATO's integrated command structure while maintaining alliance membership during the Cold War. But this development is potentially more consequential because it involves continental Europe collectively, not just one power pursuing an independent path. And critically, this is occurring amid active great power conflict rather than Cold War standoff, which means the capabilities being developed are battle-tested and operationally validated in real time. What we need to monitor closely in the coming months are European intelligence fusion centers. Watch for announcements of new satellite reconnaissance investments. Track signals intelligence cooperation frameworks being formalized between European powers. The real tell will be evidence of operational use independent of U.S. assets, particularly in contested domains like Black Sea maritime monitoring or tracking Russian logistics networks. Those capabilities would indicate Europe is moving from supplementing American intelligence to potentially replacing it. Now, let's shift to the economic dimension, because Russia is facing intensifying pressure that threatens medium-term warfighting capacity. Oil revenues are down 20%, and we're looking at potential budget deficits reaching 7.5% of expected revenues. Now, I want to be precise here because these numbers can be misleading if you don't understand the context. A 20% decline in petroleum revenues, if sustained, isn't immediately crippling, but Russia's petroleum revenues remain its primary hard currency source and the foundation of its budget. This decline constrains defense procurement, particularly high technology imports that require foreign currency. Maintenance of social spending necessary for domestic stability becomes more difficult, and Russia has limited access to international capital markets to finance deficits. Budget deficits of 7.5% are manageable short-term through reserves and domestic borrowing, but they compound over time. Think of it as a slow-acting poison rather than an immediate knockout blow. What's particularly significant here is that these numbers suggest sanctions regimes are achieving cumulative effectiveness despite widespread predictions of failure over the past 2 years. This likely reflects several mechanisms working in combination. Sanctions pressure on third-party buyers is creating real friction, insurance and shipping constraints are driving up costs even where Russian oil finds buyers, and price cap mechanisms are creating market friction that reduces Russia's revenue per barrel. The strategic calculus here is about timing. Economic pressure creates a closing window for Russian military operations.
If Moscow cannot achieve decisive objectives before fiscal constraints bind, and current deficit projections suggest that window is somewhere between 12 and 24 months, Russia's negotiating position weakens substantially. This explains the potential urgency we're seeing in current Russian offensive operations. They're trying to maximize territorial gains before economic reality forces their hand. We need to be modeling three distinct scenarios going forward. First, economic constraints force Russian negotiating flexibility within 18 months. Second, Russia successfully pivots to a total war economy with draconian domestic measures, essentially accepting significant civilian hardship to sustain military operations. Third, external economic lifelines materialize, whether that's Chinese financial support or sanctions erosion, stabilizing the Russian economy sufficiently to sustain indefinite low-intensity operations. Which brings us directly to China's role, and this is where we see the emerging Sino-Russian axis moving from rhetorical alignment to concrete co-belligerency. China's substantial support for Russian drone production capabilities represents de facto co-belligerency, despite Beijing's continued rhetorical neutrality. This isn't about dual-use technology that might have civilian applications. We're talking about technology transfer that enhances Russian strike capabilities against Ukrainian civilian infrastructure. This represents a strategic choice by Beijing with global implications. In the context of technology competition, Chinese provision of drone technology to Russia signals Beijing's willingness to prioritize the anti-Western axis over economic relations with Europe and its reputation as a neutral power. That's a significant calculation. It suggests China views the Ukraine conflict as a testing ground for challenging Western power projection capabilities and military technological superiority. The alliance dynamics here are particularly interesting, because the Sino-Russian technology partnership extends well beyond drones to broader defense industrial cooperation. What we're seeing emerge is an integrated defense production system spanning Eurasia, which partially offsets Western sanctions' effectiveness. The partnership is inherently asymmetric. Russia becomes the junior partner dependent on Chinese technology and goodwill, but it serves both parties' immediate anti-Western objectives. For global stability, this establishes a dangerous precedent. Chinese military support for Russia demonstrates that in great power conflicts, economic interdependence fails to constrain military cooperation. This undermines fundamental Western assumptions about economic leverage and suggests future conflicts may see clearer bloc formation than we anticipated during the initial era of globalization. The third-order effects are what concern me most. European and American policy responses to Chinese co-belligerency, whether that's secondary sanctions, technology export restrictions, or defense industrial cooperation constraints, will shape the broader trajectory of Western-China economic decoupling. Watch carefully for European willingness to impose real costs on Chinese entities supporting Russian military capabilities. That willingness, or lack thereof, will tell us how seriously Europe takes its own security interests versus economic relationships with Beijing. Finally, let's examine the diplomatic dimension, because what's happening in Anandabyabaiba tells us something important about where this conflict stands. Ukraine-Russia talks are focusing specifically on territorial status, which represents diplomatic crystallization around the conflict's core issue. Meanwhile, Germany maintains its refusal to directly engage Putin. The narrow diplomatic focus suggests that peripheral issues, grain exports, prisoner exchanges, civilian corridor access, may actually be resolvable. That creates clarity by isolating territory as the fundamental sticking point, but it also highlights just how difficult negotiation will be. Territorial concessions involve sovereignty, identity, and resource control. These aren't technical issues that can be resolved through creative diplomacy. They represent fundamental questions of state existence and national identity. Germany's continued refusal of direct Putin engagement, despite the potential diplomatic utility of such contact, signals that European powers maintain some principal constraints, even as pragmatism increases elsewhere. This suggests internal European divisions persist, between accommodation, and you can see potential Hungarian and Slovak positions leaning that way, versus confrontation, which is where the Baltic states, Poland, and Germany remain positioned. The choice of Abu Dhabi is also telling. The UAE hosting these talks signals Gulf states' continued positioning as mediators between Western and non-Western powers. This reflects broader Gulf strategy of maintaining relationships across geopolitical divides, and potentially enhancing recent red influence as trusted intermediaries. My assessment is that the intensification of diplomatic activity, alongside continued military operations, signals all parties recognize stalemate potential and are seeking to secure maximal territorial control before any settlement crystallizes. This actually creates escalation risk as both sides pursue military gains to strengthen their negotiating positions. So, where does this leave us strategically? We're watching European strategic autonomy emerge not as an aspirational goal, but as operational reality. We're seeing Russian economic sustainability enter serious question with a calculable timeframe. We're observing China move from tacit support to active co-belligerency. And we're witnessing diplomatic focus narrow to the irreducible core issue of territorial control. These aren't separate trends. They're interconnected developments that together represent a fundamental restructuring of the European security order and the broader Eurasian power balance. The specific signal to monitor in the next 48 hours. Watch for any announcements from European defense ministers regarding intelligence sharing frameworks or satellite reconnaissance programs. Those announcements, however technical they may sound, represent the infrastructure of strategic autonomy becoming permanent. That's the structural shift that will outlast whatever settlement eventually emerges in Ukraine. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow.